All right, fantastic. Thank you everyone for jumping on. This is basically a rerun of the presentation that we did 2 weeks ago at the Japan Real Estate Seminar. So I'll share my screen now, just so you can see what we are talking about. Two weeks ago we did the seminar. We had about, I think, 102 attendees in total, about 60 in person and just over 40 via the Zoom. Unfortunately, my particular part of the presentation, which was the first presentation, was not recorded. So I'm redoing it here. For anyone who wants to jump on live, like some of you guys, thank you for joining. You can ask any questions as either as we go along or towards the end, whatever you're comfortable with. It might be hard for me to monitor the chat while we do this, so if you just raise your hand, if you click on your video or your name and you click raise hand, that might be easier for me to actually see if you have a question or not. We will have time at the end for a Q&A for everyone. But yeah, let's get into it. Primarily, we're going to try to record this because the recording failed last time, and we want to be able to give it to all the attendees as because we did promise that they can go back and have a copy of the recordings. So let's get started. So we'll jump onto that one a little bit later. So, introduction to realestate.jp. We are a Japanese real estate agency, and we're located in Ebisu. We have access to the national database, the listings database. So it's like an MLS that you have in the US, but it's for all of Japan. And this enables us to really be able to search any kind of property that you want. So if someone comes up to me and says they're looking for an apartment or a house in Shibuya in Tokyo, I can pull up all the listings that are there and show them to you. And depending on how we go for time, we might actually do a little demonstration of that as well. Also, as a licensed agent, we have good relationships with the Japanese mega banks. So that means we can do the mortgage financing side on your behalf. We can ask you for any documentation and present that directly to the bank. We have the loan officers that are assigned to our office, to our agency. We have their number, like their phone numbers. I can just call Tanaka-san at SMBC on his mobile phone, sort of any time, and say, look, I've got this client who's interested in this kind of property. This is their income information and their residency information. Do you think you can support this client or not? And for the most part, they'll just give us a quick answer in about 10 minutes of what they think is realistic. So that's one of the benefits of working with an agency that has good bank relationships. My main focus is people looking to buy their personal property in Japan or investment properties in Tokyo. Sorry, people looking to buy their personal home in Tokyo or an investment property. But I mainly focus in the Tokyo area. Other prefectures, it's very difficult for me to be able to travel and do all the house viewings and do a good job of showing you listings. So I try to keep it in Tokyo. Okay, and myself, I've been in Japan for 20 years. I'm an Australian. I've got three young kids, so 9, 7, and 5. I've bought my personal home in Shibuya in 2013 when my first child was born. And then I began the year after that when I got into, I understanding the process and what have you, I became working as an agent. And then so I've been doing that for 9 years now. Well, time does fly. And in 2015, I bought my second home in Setagaya. And so I do have like firsthand experience as well in young families, what it's like trying to buy a home, the purchase process and everything that you kind of want when you're trying to buy your own personal place. So I think I've got a lot of experience exactly like what my clients are looking for. I was into the short-term rentals, Airbnb properties. I had 12 that I was at the peak, sort of pre-regulation and pre-COVID, and then that dwindled down. So I'm out of that business completely now, but I do have experience with it. None of the now sort of any client that wants to work with me, I don't really search for Airbnb properties or properties that are suitable for short-term stay. So if you're looking for those kind of investments, you want to make a hotel or an Airbnb property, then I probably won't really be able to help you with those. There's a lot of legal requirements that make it quite complicated to search for that. But my main goal is to help foreigners buy their own home in Tokyo. Okay. I realize there's myself as a parent and a family man, it's having a home is just such a great foundation and such a great base especially being a foreigner in Tokyo, owning it just makes you so much more comfortable and so much happier with your time in Japan, because renting is completely painful. So I want to share that comfort and security with others. Okay, so next we'll talk about why we want to buy in Japan. So Japan has great home loan terms. We've kind of heard about it, heard rumors, maybe you've seen some advertisements at banks, you've heard of friends that have done it, but the interest rates are about 0.5%. Okay, right now the best deals are going at 0.19 and 0.29%. And that's 105% financing that we're getting, which means not only are you getting the 100% value of the property, you're also getting all the closing costs, the agency fee, which is our commissions, the any kind of tax or lawyer fee, fire insurance, etc. So it's actually no money out of pocket when you want to make the purchase. The bank pays for all of it. And interest rates are so low that it's so cheap to own it. It's a lot cheaper than renting. You get to own your home after 35 years, and you can sell it at any time during, and then from the proceeds of the sale, pay off whatever remaining loan balance there is. When it's your own property, you have your own freedom to renovate or to paint, etc. And you do get, depending on your income and your situation, but you can get a tax rebate, annual tax rebate. They have changed it to 10 years, actually. I know this slide says 13, but it's been changed to 10 years, and the numbers are slightly different. It's not the deciding factor in the property purchase, but it is a bit of a bonus. Okay. So I just want to show you here, there's two sort of areas. Whenever we have this discussion about real estate in Japan, the main things we want to talk about are the property and the financing. Okay. So the property side of things is, you know, the kind of house, you know, that you want to buy, etc. And the financing talks really about how much you can borrow from the bank and what your budgeting is. So let's get into the property discussion. Okay. So one of the big aspects that we discuss is, should we buy a house or a mansion? Now, by mansion, we mean an apartment or a condo. In Japan, they use the word mansion. So a house is often multi-level. You don't really get a one-story house, okay? It'll be two or three stories are what's most common. And there's also a car park that's usually included when you buy a house. But on the other hand, with a mansion, it's a single floor. They do sometimes have mezzanette style properties, which are two stories, but for the most part, they're single floor. So for some people that are in the downsizing stage of their life, so maybe their kids are older and they've moved out, and now they're in their 60s or so, and they're looking for a smaller place that's more manageable. Maybe at that age, they no longer want to go up and downstairs. So for them, they think a single floor is more suitable. And then with a with car park, unlike, you know, Australia, where I'm from, and many other countries, when you buy an apartment, there is no assigned car parking spot to that apartment. So in Australia, almost always there'll be one or two car parking spots that are guaranteed for the apartment that come with the ownership. But for the actual in Japan, parking spots are quite few and far between in the building. If there's 50 apartments in the building, there might only be 8 car park spots. And it's very unlikely that any one apartment owns them. Anyone who wants to use that parking spot needs to rent it out. Okay, so a lot of places are full and there's no parking available. So if you definitely want a car, then that's one of the benefits of a house. And also the parking rental, depending on which area that you're in, anywhere from 20 to 50,000 yen a month. Okay, you don't find many under 20,000 yen a month rental unless you're quite far out in the suburbs. With a house, there's no management company that or body corporate with rules that you need to follow. So if you want to, you know, be noisy, if you want to have pets, if you want to have, I've got a balcony out here that I like having a barbecue on. If you want to use it as a home office, you're able to. Whereas in a mansion, they might have strict rules about what you can and cannot do. Okay. For example, barbecuing on the balconies in mansions is often not permitted. One of my old mansions that I lived in many years ago, you couldn't even hang your clothes to dry on the balcony. They had a section on the rooftop that was caged, and that's where everyone has to dry hang their clothes to dry. With a house, you if there's any repair or maintenance that needs to be done on the structure, you're responsible for it yourself. Whereas with a mansion, you pay a monthly management fee of anywhere from 10 to 50,000 yen a month, and then a repair fund fee, okay, of, you know, 10 to 30,000 yen a month, depending on the size of the property. The more square meters it is, the more expensive it becomes. And the management fee is just for a company to coordinate the management of the property day to day. And then the sinking or the repair fund fee, that's to actually, that's the pool of funds for the cost of the actual repairs or maintenance. One of the big ones they do is every about 15 years or so, they'll do the large scale repairs. So the exterior of the building, they put scaffolding up all around the building and will spend maybe 6 months painting it, doing all the waterproofing, you know, making sure that there are any cracks or whatnot for filling it, etc., repainting the roof. So you still have to pay for that if you own your own house, but you decide at when you do it. It's not a monthly expense. Houses also are not so small. Okay, usually they're over 70 square meters, at least two, usually three bedrooms and above. So if you don't want a smaller place, then a mansion is more for you. And one of the big differences as well is it's a wooden structure for a house most commonly versus a concrete for an apartment. So a concrete property does just end up having a longer life than a wooden structure. Okay. Let's just go on. And can everyone hear me okay? I guess if you can't, please just unmute and let me know. Yeah, feel free to jump in. All right, now let's talk about new versus used properties. Now, one of the big misconceptions we have that there is about the Japanese real estate market is that buying a house is like buying a new car. Okay, the moment you buy it, it's going to lose 20% of its value or 25%. But this is not true at all. Houses have an accounting life. So by that I mean accounting standards will have a depreciation timeline for a wooden or concrete building. Okay. So a wooden building has a 23-year life and a concrete building has, I think it's a 47-year life, according to accounting rules. So that's a duration that you can depreciate the value of the property down to zero. But in practice, a 20-year wooden house is not worth zero. It's not free. Okay, there still is a premium if it's in good condition and it doesn't need to be torn down. Also, in Tokyo, like most places actually, but in Tokyo definitely, there's a large value of the property price is land value. Okay, I'd say if you're looking at 80 million yen of value, the structure itself is only worth maybe 20 or 25 million yen. All right, and 60 million yen or so is in the land value. So even a house that's 20 years old and the building value has gone down to half, all right, instead of being 80 million yen, it might just be 65 or 70 million yen for that same property. All right, so it doesn't lose value the same as a used car. That idea that, oh, they tear down buildings after 20 years or they're worth nothing after 20 years is wrong, basically. So a new building is more expensive, but a used one, it's cheaper only for the land the building depreciation value, okay? And that's a small amount. A new property does have the latest design and the fittings, especially now we're a lot more conscious about energy saving and energy efficiency. So toilets, any kind of water taps, insulation, windows are double glazed and so forth. So with a new property, you do get the newer equipment and fittings. Excuse me. And also with a new property, it comes with a 10-year structural guarantee and often a 1 to 2 year guarantee on the appliances and the equipment. So we have a Panasonic kitchen and a stovetop and so on. If that fails within the first one, within the 2 years, you still have the manufacturer's warranty. And then if there's anything structural, like with the beams or waterproofing, etc., often with a brand new property, that comes with a 10-year guarantee. We're just buying a property for a client now, and that building is 3 years old. So that 10-year structural guarantee actually carries over to the next buyer. So they get have 7 years remaining on their structural guarantee. And if you purchase the property mid-construction or early in the construction stage, you can often still have, they call it the color select. You can choose the color of the wallpaper, maybe the flooring, kitchen cabinets, and so on. It really does depend on the stage of structure, if the materials have already been bought or not, but that's something that you can do. With the used property, as I mentioned, it's cheaper, but not zero, okay? It's very hard to get something heavily discounted. And also renovation costs aren't very cheap. It's like from 500,000 to 1 million yen per 10 square meters. And actually now costs have been increasing. So if you think of a 80 square meter property, that might cost you, 5 to 10 million yen in renovations. And that really brings up the base value up significantly compared to a new, like almost on par with a new property. Okay, so just something to consider. Okay, now this is one of the more important slides. And what I'll do at the end of this one, I will sort of just ask for any, I'll pause for a moment to ask if there are any questions, because people do often have some questions about things like this. So the first thing is the location, okay? Definitely being in Shibuya or Azabu area versus being out in Saitama is probably the biggest deciding factor. The next thing is distance from the station. Are you 2 or 3 minutes from the station or 25 minutes from the station? And often when, people have been renting or looking, you'll always see that advertised as, 7 minutes from the station. And you think, well, hold on, how is that calculated? Who's walking? Who's deciding this? But there is a guideline. 80 meters is 1 minute. Okay. So if you're 5 minutes from the station, then it's about 400 meters from the nearest entrance. It's not the platform, it's the station entrance or exit. Another big one is the size of both the land and the building. Just how many square meters is it? Okay, so the first three are very, are very easy to understand. The next other important one is the width of the street and access and the access street. So sometimes you'll see properties that are they're just located on a very narrow street. It's very narrow to get there. It could be very difficult to park a car. Maybe there's a street pole that like a power pole or something that's in a location that makes it very difficult to enter the car or to drive a car in there. Those narrow streets end up being quite discount the value of the land quite a bit, 10 or 15 or even 20%, depending on the situation. So this is something to keep an eye on, but is not necessarily a bad thing. So for me, I like, when I was looking for my homes, I've got little kids that I know they're going to play on the street. They're going to learn how to ride a bike there. We have a kick of the soccer ball out on the street. So being on these quiet streets with just not a lot of traffic is actually a benefit. Okay, so I'm getting a discount on the property and being in a nicer, quieter street is how I feel. But that's one of the significant factors in terms of pricing. Another one is a land orientation, like southeast facing gets the most amount of sunlight during the winter and the colder months. And then during the hotter summer months, it avoids the harsh westerly sun. Okay, so the southeast corner blocks are, or southeast corner apartments are the most costly. And then the apartment floor, the higher the floor, the more expensive the property is. You pay a bit of a premium for being higher up, especially in the tower mansions. And one thing that I did not put here as well is the age of the building. Okay, so age of the property does make a difference. But it depends whether it's a house or a mansion. There are a bunch of factors to on top of just the age. Now, some things to avoid. I'm going to mention them briefly here because it always comes up. People will jump on Sumo or on Homes or whichever website, and they'll do a search and they'll send me a link and say, "Emil, I found this property. Look, it looks great. Can we look at it?" And once they've been searching for a long time, they become familiar with sort of pricing and sizing and what to expect in their budget. And then all of a sudden they find something that's really great. And they go, "This is too good to be true." So the first thing you should check is at least land versus freehold. Okay, so it's quite common that there are properties that it's not freehold land, it's just leased. You rent it from a landowner. You own the building on top of it, but you don't own the land. You just have rental rights. And you need to pay monthly rent, anywhere from 30 to 100,000 yen a month for that. Generally, you can renew it, but there are certain types of leased land contracts where you're not able to renew. These kind of properties are difficult to finance. They are difficult to resell. And often foreigners kind of don't like the idea of a leased land situation. Like, well, hold on, I want to buy real estate. I want to own it, not rent it. Okay, that's the reason I'm doing the purchase. So that's the first thing to look at. And that will always be listed in the land rights. Is it freehold or is it leased land? And then the other two are, is it a non-regulation structure? So is it built just, is it too large for that block of land? Okay, there's in Japan, residential land has different zoning, and even commercial land has different zoning. So there's different footprints that you can build the size of the footprint of the building that you can build, and the total square meterage of the building of all the floors combined in proportion to the land. This is to control density. Now, it happens sometimes that people will, when they're building the property, they'll build it bigger than what is permitted. Okay, and that's going to become a non-regulation structure. In Japanese, they can call it yosekiritsu over. So yosekiritsu talks about the footprint ratio, and so it's over that ratio. So we tend to avoid those as well because you can't finance them, and so it has to be a cash-only purchase. And you have the same issue when you try to resell it. And then last one is no rebuild allowed. Sai Kinshiku Fuka in Japanese. And those are properties that are built sort of in the 60s and 70s. Often they're towards the rear of a development of maybe a few houses. And now the rule is any lot of land needs to have at least a 2 meter wide connection to the road. But previous to these rules, there are some properties that have maybe just a 1 meter or 1.5 meter connection to the road. So imagine there's a very small pathway that you need to walk along to get to your property at the back. You can buy these properties, you can renovate them, but you're not allowed to get plans and permits to build a new property. You can't tear it down and rebuild. So what happens is if it burns down, you can't rebuild it. That's just an example of a worst case scenario. So banks don't want to finance it. It's very hard to sell and is also heavily discounted in terms of the square meterage of land. But we avoid those. So if you see something that's a bit too good to be true, check, is it leased land? Is it a non-regulation structure? Or is it no rebuild allowed? If it's none of those, then just check. Maybe it's just on the width of the access street. Maybe it's just on a narrow street. And that's why it seems like good value. And in that case, that's not a deal breaker. Actually, you know, for some people, that's a positive if it's on a quiet street. So does anyone have any questions about that? If you do, just feel free to unmute and ask. I'll give it a few seconds and then we can carry on. Okay. All right. So that's just the summary of the property itself. You know, the property search, some things to consider. Now let's talk about financing. Okay. This is probably the more interesting part for foreigners that live here because we've heard so much about it. It could be interesting to know, well, what's actually available for me and realistically, what can I get? So when banks assess you for a home loan, there's a few key hurdles that you need to clear. The first one, and the one that confuses us the most is about our residency status. What can we get? Okay. If you're a permanent resident versus on a spouse or a work visa. If you're a permanent resident, then fine, you can apply to any bank. If you're not, if you have a work visa or a spouse visa, then generally you can still apply, but maybe the ratio is a little bit less. The next thing is, do you have a Japanese spouse? All right. Because the banks are curious, will you be here long term? Okay. Or will you just leave the country? So permanent residents, clear that. Or if you have a Japanese spouse, then there are some banks that will consider that point and you clear that hurdle. The next one is your employment type. Are you a permanent employee or a contractor? Okay, Sei Shain or Keiyaku Shain or Haken Shain. The length of employment. I had an inquiry from someone they've just been employed for 3 months at their company. So that's a little bit more challenging. Generally 12 months or more than 12 months is good. The size of the employer, is it a small company with only 3 staff or 4 staff? Or is it your own company? Are you the boss? Okay, that's also an important consideration. And also the big one is your income. How much can you borrow? All right, so we'll look at that in a bit. So the only things that for a foreigner really that you need to consider that's different is your residency status and if you have a Japanese spouse. Okay. Apart from that, once you clear those, everything else will get assessed the same as a Japanese citizen. You know, your employer, length of employment, the size of the company, how long you've been there, and your income. Now, people often, when I present this, will take photos or take shots of this slide because like, well, okay, I need to know, I need to understand all of this. This is just really an example of what different banks require. And you look at it and go, hold on, so many banks require different things. In this case, you know, one bank A wants, you must have the permanent residency and you must be 3 years at the same company and you must speak Japanese. Okay. You know, bank B will be okay if you don't have permanent residency, but you need to be married. Okay. You need to be more than 5 years in Japan. Okay. You need to be at the same employer for a certain length of time. Bank C is like, and I've had this a few times actually, where people have applied for permanent residency. Okay. They've been here for 10 years or so and they've applied for their PR. But permanent residency now takes, you know, 10 to 12 months for the application. And they think, look, I'm just having a baby. I don't have time to wait for it. So there are some banks that will be okay as long as you're in the process of it. Other banks will give you 80% financing if you don't have permanent residency. So this is really just to give you an idea that there's so many different banks with different criteria and different scenarios. One thing that I think we do very well is that we understand the different situations that foreigners often have in terms of their combination of these. And just from speaking with you when we do like our 1 hour sort of Zoom consultation, is I'm able to ask you these relevant questions and say, well, I think in your case, you know, bank B or bank E is going to be the most suitable. All right. And when I say most suitable, my goal is to try to get you 105% financing at the very cheap interest rates. Okay, that's the idea. And I think because of the experience we have with foreigners, we're able to do this better than most other typical Japanese agencies. Okay. This is also why often when you're living in Japan, you hear so many different stories about my friend was able to get a loan without permanent residency and they could get 100% financing, or my friend didn't have PR and they said nope, not at all, or my, you know, or all the different sort of bits and pieces that you hear. You don't really know their exact circumstance or what the requirements were for the bank, and although their experiences with one particular bank, maybe there's another bank that could have given them a better deal which they just weren't aware of, or their agent was not aware of. So don't try to listen to your friends and make an assessment. The best thing is to have a Zoom call with me and I can sort of do the discussion about your specifics and figure out which bank is most suitable. Now we move on just to sort of your salary, your gross annual salary, how much you get paid from your company, assuming you're just a salaried employee. So on your annual tax withholding slip, the Gensen Choshu Hyo, it says how much you've earned for the year. Usually a simple rule is you can get about 7 to 8 times your annual income. Okay. So if your salary is 10 million yen, you can borrow 70 to 80 million yen from the bank. Okay. And that can be including all the closing costs as well in that amount. And on, you know, actually interest rates are a bit lower, but on about a 0.7% interest rate, a 35-year loan term, you're going to be paying about 27,000 yen a month per 10 million yen. So if you borrow 100 million yen, then you'll be paying 270,000 yen a month. If you borrow 75 million yen, you'll be paying about 200,000 yen a month. Okay. So these are the kind of two numbers that you need to know. Is how much you can borrow is 7 to 8 times your annual income. And your repayment is about 27,000 yen per 10 million yen that you borrow. Right. So if you borrow 50 million yen, just do 5 times 27,000. And that's your monthly repayment of principal and interest. Uh, Okay, now we talk about the costs involved. All right. And often people, you know, people have heard, oh, you need, you know, 10% closing costs, 5% closing costs. But you're not sure with a great deal of confidence how accurate it is, what it includes. Is there something they're missing that is not in these costs? But yeah, usually that's about right. 6 to 8% is what we see. And these include the, and this is 6 to 8% of the property value. Okay. So it includes the registration cost, which is the scrivener and the government taxes. So the scrivener is the lawyer that they use to do the title transfer and title changes. And then there's government taxes that you need to pay when you transfer a title. In Australia, that's called stamp duty. But in Japan, it's included in the registration fees, the tokihiyo, and they are combined. Agency fee, which is where we get our commission, it's 3% plus 60,000 yen plus 10% tax, sales tax. So that 3% is of the property price, again, 6,000 yen, and then the shohize, the sale consumption tax on that. Stamp taxes are, you know, about 30 to 100,000 yen is common. 160,000 is getting a little bit, you know, when you get well over 100 million yen or 150 million yen property cost. The next one is loan life insurance. Okay, so when you take out a loan, it comes with life insurance included in it. Sometimes they call it as hoshoryo, insurance fee. Sometimes they'll call it just a jimu tesuryo, loan administration fee or office fee. So sometimes you'll have to pay the 2.2%. There are some scenarios where you don't need to pay that. Okay. And that's probably the big one that changes it from being 6% closing costs to 8% closing cost. So if you opt for the one without the loan, with this fee sort of included in the interest, you're up for 6% of closing costs. Otherwise, it will jump up to 8%. The annual asset tax, okay, is so every year in January, the asset tax, which ends up realistically being about 0.25% of the property value. When you buy it, if you buy it in this on December 1st, for example, you'll have to pay daily pro rata. So for the remainder of the year, you'll pay the seller, you know, 31 days of the annual tax. And then there's the fire insurance, fire and earthquake insurance, which is about 100,000 yen a year, I'd say, for a building. For an apartment, it's less. But for a house, it'll be about 100,000 yen per year. You'll need to pay for fire and earthquake insurance. So these are some examples of properties that we've dealt with recently. Okay, you know, the property price, the registration, agency fees, the stamp taxes, insurance, etc. And so on a 71 million yen property, it was 5 million yen of costs. On a 92 million yen property, it was about 6 million yen of costs. Okay. Now, when we talked in one of the earlier slides about financing, I said there's you can get 105% loans. And what that refers to is including all these closing costs in the loan. Okay. So I'll give you some examples, I think, in a second of how that worked out. So actually, very recently, we've had two sales, like in August and November. So in August, we had a client, he didn't have permanent residency, okay? No permanent residency, doesn't speak Japanese, but his wife is Japanese. He was able to, he bought a used tower mansion in the Azabu area near Shirokane. It was 155 million yen for the property. The closing costs came to just about 10 million yen. So he borrowed 165 million. Okay, so 100% of the property cost plus all the closing costs. So there was no money outlay from him at all. And the interest rate was 0.29. Okay. And the repayment terms are 413,000 yen per month, and that's over a 35-year loan term. Okay. Oops. The other case, which we're actually going to settle on the 10th, on Friday, is actual settlement for this property. Everything's been locked in and they get the keys on Friday. This person is a permanent residency holder. Okay, it's their second house. They bought their first house almost 10 years ago, but they've outgrown it, their apartment. Since that time, you usually can only get one home loan. The banks won't finance you to buy multiple homes because you can only really have one primary residence. In this person's case, his income grew significantly over the past decade, and now he has enough borrowing capacity on his income to actually purchase more. And the bank does not require him to sell his first property. So he might just keep that and rent it out, is the current plan. With the new property, it's in Setagaya. It's 119 million yen. It's a 1986 used house, okay, in Setagaya, 119 million yen. His closing costs come to 6 million yen, okay? He's getting 125 million yen of financing. So all the costs, everything included, and his interest rate is also 0.29%. All right. And also for him, there's zero cash outlay. And his loan repayments are 351,000 yen a month. It says here his loan term is 31 years. So I'll just explain that briefly. Often home loans are for 35-year loan terms. Okay, that's kind of the maximum and the norm. One of the rules is, though, it must be paid off by your 80th birthday. So it's a maximum of 35 years or by your 80th birthday. So this person here was already 48 years old. So he's got, you know, it's going to be 31 years left until his 80th birthday. So the maximum loan term he could get was 31 years. So once you get over 45, your loan term decreases by 1 year for each birthday that you have. And that means your borrowing capacity decreases by a few percent every year. So I do tell people, you know, if you want to borrow a lot, try to do it before you're 45. Otherwise, each year you wait, your borrowing capacity decreases. Oops. Okay, I want to touch on investment loans now. I have been getting, pretty more recently, we've been looking at investment properties. There are lots of foreigners that live here that think, look, I've already got a place. Now I've got extra cash. I want to buy a property that just a small building that will just give me rental return. And so we had someone just last month purchase a property. It was 34 million yen. It's just outside of Tokyo in Saitama. And it's I think it was an 17 or 18 year old building, kind of the size of a large house, two-story house, but there's two apartments downstairs and two apartments upstairs, like one LDK unit. And his closing costs on this property were 2.5 million yen. He got a loan of 24 million yen. So that's about a 70%, I think, loan. And so he had to pay about 12 million yen cash out of pocket. So with an investment property, often you'll need to put about 20, maybe 30% deposit, and the interest rate is 2.7%, right? Often it's from 2 to 3% is what you'll see for investment loans. It's not the same deal as a home loan, which is why I encourage people to go for a home loan first, because it's just the better deal, and then worry about buying an investment property. So he had to put 12 million yen cash outlay from himself, and he's a bit of an older gentleman. He's got 22 years left on of the loan to repay, and his mortgage repayment is 160,000 yen a month. But this property gets about 7% rental yield, So he gets a little over 200 and I think maybe 210 or 220,000 yen a month as the monthly rental from that property. And then he sort of pays this and he keeps the rest for himself. Let's move on. Okay. Is everyone good up until here? We can continue. Okay, great. Okay. Moving forward, so the action items. So often people want to know, well, how do I buy a property? So now we've discussed sort of the different types of properties. We've discussed financing. So now if we want to move forward, how does it work? What's it look like? So let's say we find a property that we like. So a client will sort of reach out and say, Emil, you know, this is what I'm interested in. I'll send a bunch of listings to them. Okay. After we have our initial sort of Zoom call, I'll send them a bunch of listings, or perhaps they jump on Sumo or Homes or whatever Japanese websites and send me some links for properties that they like. And then we'll go and view them. Once we find a property that you like, we apply for the bank pre-approval. Okay. And the bank pre-approval is, again, based on your financial situation and your residency. I'll discuss with different banks and identify which is the best bank to get you the best kind of loan. We don't receive any kickback or any commission from the banks. So our ideal situation is to get you the best loan term. We don't have any incentive to use any particular bank. And if you want to get financing yourself, that's fine. You can try as well. But I'm quite confident that we're able to get it faster and more efficiently than you are. You know, we just do it more often and have better connections with the banks. So we apply for a loan pre-approval. And once we have the pre-approval, we can make an offer with the seller and actually negotiate the price. Without pre-approval, the sellers don't take us too seriously because they don't know if we can even finance it or not. Once we've agreed on the price and the contract day, then we'll actually go and sign the contract, okay? And when you go and sign the contract of sale, that's when you pay about a 5% deposit and the deal is locked in, okay? Up until the contract of sale, there's no obligation at all, okay? You can cancel at any time, but once the contract is signed, you pay 5% deposit, then there's penalty fees for canceling. If you want to cancel, you forfeit your deposit. If the seller wants to cancel, they must refund your deposit and pay the same amount as your deposit as a penalty fee, as a cancellation. So that's why we don't like to do, you know, 500,000 yen or 1 million yen as a deposit, because it doesn't really secure either party. Either of them can really just cancel if they wish and just exit the deal with just a 1 million yen penalty on a 100 million yen kind of property. Once the contract is signed, we begin the formal bank application. All right. Up until this stage, we've only got the pre-approval. So when we get so what we do with the formal bank application is the contract that we sold with, that we signed with the seller, we send a copy of that to the bank. And they will give us, it takes 7 to 14 days for the formal approval. Usually, if we have a pre-approval, it's very unlikely that they will not give us the formal approval. But let's say, for example, the bank does reject us for some reason. In the contract of sale, there is a clause that it is subject, it's called the subject to finance clause. If for some reason we do not get the formal approval, then we can be refunded our deposit. So there's no risk of losing that deposit. What happens is after we've gotten the formal bank approval, we then go sign the bank loan contract. So it's the formal loan agreement with the bank. And then about 7 to 10 days later, we actually have settlement. And on settlement day, we'll either go to the bank or to our office in Ibis, and the bank will transfer all the funds from the bank into your personal bank account. And then from your personal bank account, all the funds will get transferred out to the seller, to the scrivener, to the agent, and everything gets paid. And we're usually sitting in the office, the bank or our office. The scrivener is also there. The scrivener will confirm that, yes, the funds have been transferred. Everything's been received. He will have both the seller and buyer sign some documents. And then the scrivener will go to the Ministry of Affairs and perform the actual title transfer. Okay. And that happens on the day of settlement. This whole process takes about 4 to 6 weeks. Okay. 4 weeks if we really rush it. 6 weeks is kind of quite a comfortable pace. Once you sign the contract of sale with the seller, though, it is off the market, and the seller won't be trying to sell it or won't accept any other offers, because the deposit is the penalty fee for cancelling it, and they usually don't want to deal with that. Okay. Oops, sorry. Mm-hmm. All right, so next steps. So now sort of we discussed all the process. So the next step is find an agent and have an initial consultation. I hope that's, you know, if you're looking for a home in Tokyo, then you can reach out to me, and that's what I do. Otherwise, look, if you're in a different area, different prefecture or whatnot, and I can't really do that, support you with that, then just find a local agent that you're comfortable with, go into different branches, find someone local, and just talk to them. Okay, about your needs and your requirements. They should also have contacts with banks, and can give you, you know, ideas on financing options. Then you schedule to see some properties. Okay, you've given them the requirements. Go out and view a bunch of properties. And at the same time, the agent should be talking with the banks to get the financing ready. And then when you find the right place, you make an offer. Okay, and once you've made the offer, then you go through this process here, what we just discussed. If you're self-employed or a business owner, often people in this scenario are either not paying themselves a great deal of money, or their numbers are in a way that their income is quite low, okay, to manage tax. So they probably cannot borrow as much as they want. So it's important to discuss this and be considerate of this in advance, because it may take 1 to 2 years of you, you know, deciding that you deserve more income, or you need to grow your business larger to have more revenue in order to be able to get the financing that you want. Okay, almost there. And now for people who are interested in having a consultation with me, please, you can visit the realestate.jp website and just click on book a Zoom meeting, or you can scan this QR code. Usually, or you can email me, sales@realestate.jp. Okay. And we can usually look, it takes 45 minutes to 1 hour is the call length. And I'll really discuss your either your financing situation and also your requirements for a property, and see if we're able to help and whatnot. So if I jump onto here, okay, you can click on the top right here, book a Zoom meeting. I was going to book a meeting here, but on the top right, book a Zoom meeting with Emil. And I've opened up my schedule for the week, so you can just book any of these days coming up next week. You can just select a time. Click next. There are a few questions just about, you know, your name and email, phone number, what kind of property you're looking for, your spouse, your visa situation, et cetera, family situation, approximate income and employment, and then schedule the event. and you'll automatically get a Zoom link, and I'll come in my calendar as well, and then we can meet and discuss your situation. So that's it for us for this presentation. Let's see. Now I'll just open up for Q&A. So if anyone has any questions, please, you can unmute and feel free to ask.
So I have a question. Is it possible to get a loan with Japanese bank if majority of your income comes from a different country, United States, in my case?
Usually no. So that's a very common question that we have. You're a resident here in Japan?
No, I'm not a resident. I'm going to be a business manager visa with non-Japanese spouse.
Okay. So if you're on a business manager visa, there's a few situations. So look, let's just assume you live here, you're resident, even if you're a Japanese citizen. Okay. And I've had this before. I've had someone who they work remotely for an American company in IT, and all their money is paid in the US, and then they will remit that money from the US to Japan, and declare it locally in the tax office. The Japanese banks did not want to work with them. The Japanese banks were like, well, we don't know that company, that employer, so we're not going to give them financing. All right, is what they'll say. If you're here on a business manager visa, though, and you're paid a salary from the company, if that business that you're operating in Japan has U.S. income, so, for example, they've got a U.S. client, and that money is getting paid to the Japanese entity, and then that Japanese entity is paying you as regular domestic income, that's a bit different, because the Japanese entity is just getting business revenue, be it domestically or overseas, and that's more acceptable, okay, because they see you as an individual are getting paid a Japanese salary from a Japanese entity, even though you're probably the representative director, is that correct?
Yes, a representative director, and the company is actually a subsidiary of U.S. office.
Oh, okay. But so you're not the owner of it. You're just sent here to be like, is it a large U.S. company?
No, not really.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a real estate company that me and my husband both own.
Okay. Yeah. We have that sometimes. So if it's like an LLC or just a small company there.
Yes.
Then, and you are just here, then they'll consider, look, that company is really just you, right? The one in the US. This is a bit different that, let's say, you know, I have some people that, like one person now, he works for it's quite a large company, and he's sent over here for, what do you call it? Like he's the daihyo of the Japanese entity. He's sent to establish the Japanese office. But he's not the owner of the company. It's quite a large multinational company. He's employed to be I believe it's a French company, actually. His job is to start up the business here. So the banks will look at that a little bit differently because they go, okay, it's not just him. It's not his own business. So they treat that different. But in general, if you're the representative director, even if you are just a local resident and your business is 100% here, if you're the Daihyo Torishimariyaku, the banks will want 20% deposit. That's even for Japanese citizens.
That would be for investment only or for home purchase as well?
For home purchases.
Now, would the interest for investment purchase get any lower because I do not need to buy a home?
No.
No. Okay.
No. If it's for your personal home, you get those sub 1% interest rates. If it's for an investment property, it will be, 2 to 3%. I have seen some banks even offer 3.9, almost 4%. They'll give you a bit more money, but the terms, the interest rate just makes it not so viable.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Sure.
And you do work with Saitama, right? Since you had a case with them, or was that a one-time thing?
It depends where in Saitama as well. If it's for a house search, generally no, because we have to visit a lot. But if it's for an entire investment building, and often with the investment properties, they are not like they're tenanted, so we can't even view inside. So really, it just becomes, look, what are the numbers? What's the age of the building, the location? What's the rental return? And if you want to have a look at the building, you can sort of just go and have a look yourself. Maybe only after you've decided, we may go and meet and visit once around the outside. But that's something we can do almost entirely remotely. That could be possible, but in general, it depends on the budget, like 30 or 40 million yen and above is what we'd be looking at.
And the down payment is minimum 20% would be for investment loan.
Yeah, minimum. So it's 20%, but what we've been getting recently is the banks will pay 20% of the assessed value. And their assessment value will often be, not 100% of the purchase price. They may assess it at, 90% of the property value. So although they say we'll give you 80%, their assessment is only 90% of the purchase price, and they're giving 80% of their 90% assessed value. So in practice, it might be closer to 30% cash out of pocket you need to pay. So it's 30% for that plus, 6 to 8% closing costs. So you need maybe, 35, about 35% almost of cash. So yeah, if you want to go that route, yeah, definitely it's possible.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
I have a question, Emil.
Yes.
Hi. I'm curious if you have your heart set on a house, for instance, detached, that is 20 years old, will the bank still give you full funding for that?
Yes. Yeah. 20 years is not too old for a house. Like it's completely fine. So this one that we are buying, I think in one of the finance examples, I said it was 119 million yen in Setagaya. That's a 1986 built property. So, and they're banks giving 105% financing. So yeah, it is possible. If it's for an investment, it's a little bit different. For an investment, the banks will think, look, this building has 23 years or 40 years, depending if it's concrete or wood, of usable life. And if it's already 20 years old, there's not a lot of years left of usable life by accounting standards. But if it's your personal home, then no, it's okay.
Great. Thank you.
No problem. Any other questions?
Hi. Sorry, Fabian Chia speaking here. No camera because of time zone difference.
Oh, no worries.
I realize maybe you've been going for a while already because I think recently we changed to winter time and so we're an hour late.
Okay.
My question is relating to specifically Kyoto. Mm-hmm. We're planning to save up some money to buy a family or a family holiday home there in 2026. Mm-hmm. And I've read that Kyoto specifically is planning to introduce a new Akiya law in 2026 to charge more tax on Akiya. Is that something you were already aware of?
I have heard some stuff about Akiya countermeasures, and it's not just Kyoto. There's lots of places. I know one of the big issues that there are around Japan is they don't know who the owners of a lot of these properties are. So on the actual land title, on the title, let's say it becomes an inheritance and people are meant to inherit the property and it gets divided to, three or five different people.
I see.
And then those people are maybe not updating their addresses on the title because it costs money. You need a scrivener to update the address on the title. It becomes a complete mess. And these are properties from years and years ago. And in order to sell or transfer it, you need everyone on the title, all the owners, to approve and sign off on it. And then it has a name, Yamada Taro is not a unique name. So you got this name and an address, but you have no idea that address is from 30 years ago, 40 years ago. So they're having difficulty finding people. So one of the rules that they've been talking about is maybe requiring people to update their address on it. So that's one form of the regulation change in order to try to mitigate this Akia situation where they cannot find the owners. I'm not sure about Kyoto's specific rule and what they're going to implement, but yeah, Akia sort of are a problem in Japan, and it's sort of both wasted space and also a danger and a fire hazard is one of the big issues they're concerned about. So I don't know about Kyoto's specific one, but yes, there are definitely in Japan there's movement happening to try to work on this, the Akia issue.
So my question is kind of on from that is this is something I've read that they're introducing this law in 2026. So I'm kind of assuming, and I would love to have your opinion on it, that that would mean that there will be a lot more people than now, or be more urgency to get rid of their Akia. And it's because the tax is supposedly quite steep in Kyoto, specifically the city, would be ideal for us because we would be looking specifically for an Akia in the city of Kyoto. Is kind of like a Anton situation where we'd like to DIY it.
Yeah. Did you live here right now, or?
I don't know. We live in London, and my brother is local. He lives in Tokyo, so that's convenient for us in terms of having someone on the ground, but we don't live there now.
Yeah. So I've never really dealt with Akia. I've seen them, I've visited some, but yeah, I've never dealt with it myself. So I can't really give a good any real good information about that. It both, yes, if it's changing, there may be more available and people may be more, keen to get rid of these properties if the taxes are increasing. But there could be some Akia which are just, they don't even know who the owner is, right? So that becomes, you need to go to Akia banks and then there's different processes involved. I do think because of that, there will be people like Anton, for example, who have businesses that just cater to doing selling these Akia. Okay, so that could be an avenue that you can explore, which is going to be easier than you trying to just navigate it yourself. You won't get it as cheap. Of course, there'll be a premium for that service, but I think with a lot of these real estate services, they're going to do stuff that you probably cannot do yourself. And even though you have to pay them a service fee, it's your end result might be a better property than what you could have found trying to do it on your own. But in terms of actual, the timing and how it works and whether it's, going to be a great opportunity, what the market is, how the market is going to react, I'm not too sure about that. About how quickly it will happen. They can say, look, in 2026, we're introducing this tax, this additional tax for Akia. You need to do something with the property. But all of a sudden, right away, everyone's going to jump and start selling the Akia. I think it's going to be a more gradual transition than that, as I've seen a lot of times in Japan.
Understood.
Changes.
Interesting. If I can just elaborate a little bit, we are both architects, so we have a skill set that will be somewhat useful in doing part of it ourselves, at least. And I appreciate that your talks more about financing. This might not be your bag, but where do you think would be a good start? Because financing wise, I think we're trying to do it low budget as possible, but mostly cash by ourselves to uncomplicate things. Where do you think we might start building a network of people that we can ask to help us out with that, like services that you said, or just local people? As a real estate involved person in Japan, where do you think we should be looking?
Okay, so financing, if you're not resident here, you won't be able to get financing. So you can think of it, everything's going to be cash, a cash cost. Usually I tell people, look, find a local area, find an agent in the local area. They will know some properties. Okay, if you want to ask for Akiya, they will be able to point you out to, okay, I know this group of people that do Akiya in Kyoto, for example. They'll just have experience. In the same way, if you ask me for Akiya in Tokyo, I'll probably put you on to Anton because he's got the most experience. He doesn't really do sales for individuals, but he's probably one of the people to speak to who can point you in the right direction. Because it's not what I do. But I think if you keep it local, especially when you talk about Akiya, is not just, I can't just jump on the national database and find Akiya, these vacated or abandoned properties. So yeah, speak with someone local. And also then they will also have experience with renovation companies. Okay. Or any kind of architects in the area, or and they can share their network, and then you can sort of inquire and find out about, who can do what for you. But yeah, I think the first thing is just find an agent locally, and they can do that. So for example, someone comes to us and they want to buy a place locally, then yeah, I can find an ordinary property. And then when it comes to renovation, well, our office has a renovation team. Okay, so we can do renovations, we can do property management. We have almost 1,000 properties, like 950 or so properties under property management. So, you know, we can also advise on and take care of rental management for properties after, you know, if you're not in town or if it's an investment property. Again, just within sort of Tokyo, within like an hour of our office in Ibis. But yeah, someone local will be able to, either they do it in-house or they know the tradespeople that can help you. So that's why I say just ask locally. You can ask us, but our renovation team won't go down to Kyoto to do work. Mm-hmm. It's feasible.
Yeah. Do you happen to know any good companies in Kyoto? Just asking.
I haven't really dealt with Kyoto. I'm just really, I focus primarily in Tokyo. So yeah, so I can't assist there anymore.
That's all right. Thank you. Thank you for your insight.
No worries. Okay.
And I do have another question about loans in Japanese banks. Do they accept collateral, like a property to increase, my ability to, for the amount of loan, for example?
Now, was this for a home loan or for investment?
No, for investment, for example. So I have a home and it's fully paid off. What if I would do a 20% or 30% down payment for an investment loan and say, well, how about I put also my house as a collateral?
Is the property in Tokyo?
Kawaguchi.
Okay. I know some banks have... can do that, but I don't have any experience with that right now. My experience with investment loans is really the property that they're buying is the collateral. The owners that I work with don't have don't have another property which they can use as collateral.
Okay.
So, you could possibly find something, but not, I don't have experience with that. Also, when you're buying an investment property like that, they will look at your income as well. It's like, how much can you borrow based on you as an individual? Okay, so that might be, you know, if you're not paying yourself a lot or it's at, you know, or whatnot, then they'll say, well, hold on, you can borrow X amount. We'll only give you 80% based on your income or 70%. So even if you have the collateral, I think your income makes is a deciding factor in that.
Okay. Thank you.
And they will also look at both your income and, because you're the representative director, they will look at the P&L of the company, and they don't like it if it's in the red. Okay, if you have your own branch here in Japan, it needs to be in the black, not in the red, generally for at least 2 years. So just something to keep in mind. They will look at your company's financial statements.
Now, what if the company, the whole purpose of the company is to start buying investment properties in Japan?
Then in that case, you're better off looking at financing just for the company, not via yourself. Sorry, I was speaking under the impression that your company you're establishing is a different kind of business. But if you're now looking just for having a company to get business loans, and that company is going to invest, then yes, you can find banks that will finance business loans according to your just to your company, and then they start assessing more on the property itself, not on your individual income.
Would that be something that you would work with as well?
It really depends on sort of the location and the budget. But also, I don't, like, right now, the only bank that I know that sort of works with that is there's one, but we haven't successfully completed a transaction with them yet. But yeah, that's something we could definitely work on. However, they give only about 60% financing. So it's about 60% financing. I think loan establishment fee is 3.3% of the loan value. And they just work in properties, like the nicer properties in the Tokyo area. They don't deal sort of in other prefectures. Tokyo, maybe Kanagawa. I haven't seen them sort of really show much interest in regions outside of those.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
No worries. But yeah, Lulia, if you like, you can schedule a meeting with me and we can sort of talk a bit more specifics about, you know, your the business and the numbers and whatnot, if you're interested. I feel that you've got, you know, quite a unique, as everyone does, but, you know, not such a clear-cut sort of scenario in terms of your employment and your business and your strategy. So that's when we really need to sort of find specific details and identify what might be the best option moving forward for you.
I did figure we're going to need a meeting. I just thought maybe I'll ask some questions now and get at least something.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think right now they tend to be sort of general kind of responses, because then, like, you know, I don't want to talk about, well, how much is, you know, your company finances and the numbers and
I probably won't say that to you right now anyways.
Yeah, exactly, right. Yeah, so that kind of stuff is why we like to have the private one-on-one calls to really hash that out and get a better idea. Okay.
Sounds good.
Fantastic. Okay. So if anyone else has another question, please feel free to unmute and you can ask. Otherwise, I might wrap this up.
Just a very quick generic one before we leave. Do you feel like over the last couple of years, or do you see currently an uptick in foreigners coming to buy in Japan?
Yes. Yeah. So there's two types of, about this foreigners coming to buy. So there are lots of foreigners moving to Japan, but most of my clients, I have two types of clients. One is the long-term residents like myself, and they're buying their personal homes. And now it's just becoming more, they're becoming more comfortable. There's just more foreigners sort of that are buying properties. It's the idea of buying and living here for a long time is just becoming more and more common. This was also amplified during COVID, because that was a really good time that people could see how comfortable Japan was during COVID. It wasn't chaotic. There was no real big political outrage and conflict and disputes that you had polarizing many other countries, like in the US, in Australia, in the UK. You know, a lot of Western countries were very polarized about, you know, about masks and vaccines. Whereas Japan, I think, everyone just wore a mask because it's culturally sort of what they do when they're sick. It wasn't political. Vaccines were sort of, you know, were not sort of really pushed or required. People were getting them, but if people didn't want to get them, it wasn't overly forced. There was no, you're not vaccinated, so you can't work, right? That we had in other countries. So a lot of foreigners in Japan were like, hold on, this, when stuff really hits the fan, it's like, okay, this is actually a safe, comfortable place. Like, we still have our sanity here to a degree. So they decided, okay, you know what? Actually, I'm okay buying here. I don't actually like the idea. What I see my country going through right now is not very attractive. So at this, you know, a little bit into COVID, those years, 2020, 2021 was really, really busy for me, actually. With foreigners being more comfortable to buy and going, yep, let's do this. And now, with the low yen, especially the US dollar, I'm having lots of cash investors, anyone with US dollar savings. And usually they're people that have some kind of connection to Japan. So I'm getting people that either have done some, like the foreign couples that have done some type of university exchange or high school exchange, or just love Japan and like the idea of coming here, you know, 2 to 4 months a year in the spring and autumn time, that they're ready to just buy a holiday house because it's cheap. Or if it's a couple where one spouse is Japanese, so I'll get lots of Americans where there'll be a Japanese wife, they think, okay, it's completely, you know, we can see in our future that we're going to be back and forth to Japan regularly. And Japan is 20 to 40% discounted just because of the yen over the past several years. So now is a really good time to buy. So that's what we're seeing now.
That sounds good. And now one to completely change tack. Sorry, it's more about my brother. My brother is has been a student there for the last 4 years on student visas, and he's now looking for a job, which is not that easy apparently. And he's planning to stay and get a full time job. At what point do you think it would be feasible for him to think about buying a home? How many years of employment? What kind of stability?
Look, if he gets just a regular salaried employee job, and he's on he goes from student visa to a work visa, then about 12 months of employment, he can buy a place. But remember, it's, you know, 7 to 8 times his income, but because he doesn't have permanent residency and he's likely unmarried, it will be he'll need a 20% deposit.
Okay.
Is going to be expected. But also, if he's, you know, in his early 20s, possibly the property that he buys now may not be something he wants. Like, it depends on his stage of life. Like, it may not be the family home that he wants in the future. It's really just for several years. If he's got a girlfriend or fiance and he's looking to get married soon, then maybe, depends on the stage of life, it's better to search for something that's going to be more suited to family. I tell people, if you choose a place that you want to stay at least like 3 to 5 years, okay, it's going to do a good job for, say, the next 5 years. Because of the, you know, 6 to 8% closing costs, and then when you sell a property, there's 3% fees you need to pay to the agent when you sell. There's almost 10% in fees for each time you buy and sell a property in total. So you only kind of get that back after about 3 to 5 years of living there in terms of the mortgage repayment. So he shouldn't buy a place that he thinks, oh, I'm only going to be here for 1 or 2 years, and then it's not going to be suitable anymore. Which I think if he's just finished university, just started a job, his first place now with his first job is going to be the most amount of money he's ever had, right? I know that was my experience, and it's still not going to be a lot. He may think he's done great, but maybe in 3 years or so, he'll be in a much better position to buy something nicer than what he was in year one of employment. So maybe at his stage, don't rush into it. He doesn't want to make the bad choice that he needs to change in 2 or 3 years' time. So that's probably my only caution to someone who's just started work is
That sounded nice.
But yeah, look, if he's been working for a year or so, he should be able to get that financing, and maybe he's either got money saved up. But if he's anything like I was when I was a student, probably he probably doesn't have a lot of money. If the family's willing to support him and give him some funds for the 20% deposit, which is not uncommon, sure, he can get a place after about a year of employment. Just needs to make sure that I think is buy a place that you want to be there for at least 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, agreed. And I remember you saying something in the Q&A last time about if you're not a permanent resident, then the interest rates are a little bit higher. Is that true? Are there two? I heard something about very low in the 1% range when you're a permanent resident, and people who had not gotten their permanent residence yet, something in the two point something percent range.
That was like for business loans and whatnot. But probably you can get, I think even around like points, like if you put 20% deposit, about 0.7%.
Oh wow, that's extremely
It's still a good deal.
okay. That's very good to know. But so it wouldn't finance everything and the fees. It would just be a 20% deposit, and then the rest of the cost, excluding the fees, or
So the bank will give 80% of the property price.
yeah, okay.
So you need to put 20% deposit plus the closing, plus the fees.
Okay, got it.
No
Great.
worries.
That's very helpful. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you too.
Last one for
Okay. Anything else? Awesome. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up now. Thank you everyone for your time. I do appreciate this. And yeah, if you do want to, if you do have any other questions, or want to do a consultation, please just jump to the realestate.jp website. There'll be a book a Zoom meeting with me. I've opened up the calendar for next week, so it's going to be easy to schedule. But often that's not open. So if you're watching a recording of this, you might be better off going emailing me sales@realestate.jp, and we can sort of bounce back sometimes, and then I'll open up my calendar so we can book a Zoom call. Okay, everyone, thank you so much for your time. I'm going to end the call there. Have a great day. Bye bye.